Welcome to Escape from Plan A. It's Teen with my wife,
Shan.
Hello. What are we talking about today, honey?
Oh, you say you want to talk about the weird spending behavior in America.
Yeah.
Which I not really understand.
What do you mean you don't understand?
I don't understand how American can, like, just keep spending.
Yeah.
Like, exceed their income.
Oh, they spend well beyond their income.
Yeah, that part I don't really understand because that's really different than most of the Chinese people that I know of.
Yeah.
Like in China or even people who are in here.
Yeah. I don't know what it is. I think before I used to be a little bit trapped in spending this spending cycle.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's very lifestyle driven. It's very class driven. It's basically like pretty straightforward. I mean, there's really nothing that mysterious about it. It's like I earn this much money.
Mm-hmm.
I now deserve this kind of lifestyle. And then you go look at the lifestyle, which is totally reasonable. I want a house in the suburbs. I want a car. I want to send my kids to a good school district. You know, really nothing outlandish, right? Like, that's pretty reasonable. But then you look at what it costs, and it's priced in a way that always seems to be a little bit out of reach. For some reason, like, what we want always seems to be a little bit out of reach from what we earn. We're always wanting a lifestyle that's a little bit beyond what we can easily afford.
What do you think that would happen that, like, creating this problem? Because I have seen a lot of people spending beyond their means, like, you know, income. And, I mean, it's a very common thing.
Mm-hmm.
Like, when I'm working in my office, I have seen people who, like, have really low income, but they will spend $100 on cable bills. I'm like, I don't know.
I mean, that's not so horrible, is it? I mean, the cable thing doesn't really...
Well, if your income is $800 and your cable bill is, like, $200, that's not good.
That's true. Yeah.
I see they're expensive and they are income.
Yeah.
I'm like, how did that even happen? That's not even their lifestyle. Yeah. I don't even pay that much.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, people are really, they really like their television, I guess. I don't know.
To the point, like, they're willing to pay one quarter of the...
It's also, I think the big problem, look, I mean, wanting to buy nice things is, like, obvious, right?
Yeah, I like nice things.
But I think the problem is that they really had the wind in their sails for a long time, because everything kept going up in price.
Mm-hmm.
So when things go up in price, generally it's better to buy things now rather than later.
I can understand if you're talking about, you know, purchasing real estate, but I don't understand why would you want to...
No, I mean, even non-investment items, like a car or like a new appliance or whatever, if those are going up in price, then it's better to buy it now than later. But then, yeah, the other big thing, obviously, is the housing price, right? So if the housing prices are going up, it pretty much gives you – it's a wealth effect, because you now have an asset on your balance sheet that is constantly going up in value, which you can tell because you're constantly getting letters in the mail from – realtor saying, like, hey, we just sold your neighbor's house for this much.
Or your property tax, they tell you.
Or they tell you, yeah. And so let's say you bought a house for $350,000, and now it's worth $650,000. You're going to feel richer. Even if you don't have any cash in the bank, like, you're going to feel like you're sitting on a $650,000 house. It's going to make you feel a lot more secure than if it weren't appreciated, even though it makes no difference.
Yeah, but same thing.
In fact, it's worse for you because you have to pay higher taxes. But yeah.
Yeah, but same thing also happened, like, in Shanghai.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of, like, old houses, but right now it's in the center area.
Mm-hmm.
It's also go up in value.
Mm-hmm.
But all those people who live inside, they know that it just go up in value. Doesn't mean their value increase until they sell it.
Yeah.
So I still don't get, like, how come there's such big gap between the ways of thinking.
I don't know. I mean, I don't know what accounts for Chinese saving habits other than just cultural tendencies. Maybe we just don't have that cultural tendency.
I think we just have to see the money in hand in order to feel that is the real, you know, money uh-huh. that we're holding on. Otherwise, everything else, otherwise that play is just a play for you to live.
Yeah. I honestly don't know because I'm not comfortable with... I have to say, like, in my life, when I was in a period where I sometimes would spend more than I was taking in, right?
Yeah, so
I would be paying out of savings to cover my expenses, and it feels terrible going backwards. I mean, I hated the feeling, but it kept happening, and I have to say, I think a big part of it is. It's hard to coordinate with a spouse on saving, on spending. It's really hard to rein in spending if you're not on the same page with your spouse. It's really difficult.
So you mean your spouse could be a problem?
Yeah, I found with my friends that if you're a single guy, it's mm-hmm. super easy to save.
But did you save a lot when you were single?
Yeah, when I'm single, I don't spend much money, right? It really becomes a problem when you're with someone, particularly when you're married, mm-hmm. and you start working on a dual budget, like a communal budget, right? You're one unit, but it's two people, and it's hard. Unless you're really good at communicating and you guys have similar attitudes about spending, it's really hard to get on board. I'll be perfectly honest,
mm-hmm.
I think a lot of my friends' wives are the ones who push a lot of the spending.
Well, but they also have kids.
They have kids, but it's also, you know, like insisting on vacations, insisting on jewelry, insisting on luxury cars, insisting on just a general high maintenance lifestyle that... I don't see the wisdom of it. I'm always advocating that they save money.
Is it possible that if they don't spend that money, mm-hmm. their kid is going to be, you know, have no friend in school or something?
It's part. Yeah, I mean, I've said this to in other pods with Steve.
Mm-hmm.
That I think it's really easy for me to say, hey, save money. Like, who cares what people think about your status? But it would be harder if you had kids because I don't want people to think, you know, I wouldn't want people to think my kids were the poor kids or whatever. I can see that being harder to control. You don't want people to think badly of your kids, you know. So.
When you was kid, do you think that your parents have this similar problem?
No, I had a problem in the sense that my parents. Not a problem. I didn't really care, but my parents always bought lousy cars and, you know, were not general. Like we took really, really, you know, very inexpensive vacations. We didn't go to. I never went to Europe until I was older and went by myself.
Yeah, I think you went to Paris like 7 times.
Yeah, but that's after like you know, that's like after college and stuff. I traveled on my own money.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, like when I was a kid growing up, like all our vacations were like we would drive to Canada or something. That's what we didn't fly anywhere.
So what you think that make the, you know, the difference between back then and now?
Now I think there's just fewer parents who would willingly, like I think my parents almost intentionally made us feel poorer than we were because they actually are financially pretty well off, right? Like they've always had enough money to cover to live a higher lifestyle than they do,
mm-hmm.
but they just never did it. And I think part of it was intentional.
Okay, do you think that your parents may get some pressure from their own circle, like
to spend more?
Yeah.
Some people were really flashy; they just didn't care.
Okay, so it's mostly about the attitude that you have.
Yeah. Yeah, like my friends would, they would go on fancier vacations, or their parents would buy luxury cars, whereas we, you know, had lousy cars and we didn't go on any of those such vacations. And I just got used to it. I didn't really care.
Do you think that your friend will be like treat you differently if you don't?
I don't think so. They didn't really care. They never looked down on me for that, as far as I know.
Because, like,
maybe they did. I'm not that I know of.
But you know, like my high school friend, one of my friend went to Ivy League,
mm-hmm.
and two of my friend went to CUNY, and I went to SUNY,
yeah.
and we all have like different income, like all in the different rent. But when we get together, I never feel the pressure, you know.
Neither did I. I mean, I went to Maryland. A lot of my friends went to fancier out-of-state schools, and any sort of pressure, I think if there were any, I think it was me on myself. It wasn't like other people. I mean, maybe some people thought this or that. No one said anything to me. I'm not sure anyone treated me differently, and if they did, I didn't really notice. I didn't really care.
Okay, so meaning that the pressure not come from your real friends.
It comes from yourself.
It comes from yourself.
That's what I think. I think a lot of it is just personal insecurity and feeling like you need others to think of you a certain way. And I think it's a big fallacy. It's a big mistake, because in reality, I don't think people think about you very much at all. I don't think people waste their time thinking about me and whether how they compare to me. And if they did, it doesn't matter anyway. But I think a lot of people are more the people who end up spending for lifestyles that they really shouldn't be doing. I think they really should be thinking more about about retirement or emergencies. Like,
is it like, do they feel like it's just too much to think of for retirement?
Maybe.
Because not all the people can make it too.
I don't know. I mean, I think they have like a certain amount just kind of like being flowed into their retirement account. So they just kind of put retirement, they don't even think about it. It's on autopilot. They just max out their 401k or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Max out their IRA. And so they've got retirement kind of just, that's just being deducted out of their paycheck.
Mm-hmm.
And then whatever else comes in, you know, they're just like, a portion goes to the mortgage, a portion goes to the car payments, a portion goes to the school payments, blah, 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 blah.
Mm-hmm. And then the remaining go to travel?
And then the remaining, either the credit card bill eats the rest of it or it doesn't, right? Like, the big X factor is the credit card bill. And I think people, like, they just kind of wait till the end of the month. They're just charging that thing without really thinking about it. And then when the statement comes, it's kind of like a mystery. Like, ooh, I bet you it's big. And
it's
you open it.
Blind box.
Yeah, it's a blind box because they're not actively budgeting. So they don't know. I mean, I don't really actively budget either. I don't think we do, but.
But because we actually, like, live in a pretty.
Yeah, I mean, we just
relatively don't play frugal. And we can, you know.
And we're just frugal generally.
I mean, I just don't feel safe if I don't see enough money in my account, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's the only thing.
Yeah.
That's why I can't understand why people can, like, spend, like you know, income equivalent to the expenses.
Yeah.
Or exceeded them.
I don't know. I honestly don't know what it is. But I think that people have a hard time saving.
That's a very.
They're just spending too much money. Period. I know, because, like, look, I know how much money they're making, more or less, right? Within a certain degree of certainty. I know how much I make. Mm-hmm. I know what it's like to budget with that, how much you could save, whatever. And I imagine trying to, and I have an idea of how much it would cost. Like, I've seen their credit card bills and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And it's eating, I mean, it must be eating, the discretionary spending I've seen must be eating at least half or more of their take-home income.
Do you think that they actually pretty happy in, like, spending that much? Whatever they spend, does that buy them happiness?
No, I think that the credit card bill bums them out every month. I know, I've been there. The credit card bill comes, and you're always like, man, I got it. It's kind of like when you're overweight.
Mm-hmm.
And you're always kind of a little bit bummed out that you're fat.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you're just always like, man, I lose that weight. And then you kind of don't do it. You know what I mean? It's just like this chronic unhappiness. You're just kind of like, man, I'm like fat, and then but I'm not doing anything about it. You know, like you're not.
So you're kind of like pretty like negative.
Yeah, it sucks.
And you're like lazy, and because you feel like you can't do it, that's why you're laid back and just like ignore.
I think it leads to a low grade. It's very frustrating.
Oh, it seemed like you guys are trying to avoid a reality.
You're just trying to trim the fat. You're just hoping that your credit card bill this month is it. But then I don't know what it is, but it's just like short term. It's hard to change your behavior once you're used to a certain level of convenience and luxury.
Uh-huh.
I think a lot of it's convenience, but you're just like, it's, you know, you just don't quite believe that restaurants could add up to that much.
Oh my God,
restaurant. Yeah, it just doesn't strike you that your restaurant, that just restaurants alone is costing you literally like thousands of dollars.
Of
like,
course, if you're constantly eating outside.
Constantly. Yeah, with a family of four.
Dining in like Manhattan or something, or even in Queens.
So it's so, I mean, honestly, it's so easy when you, it's this vague feeling of like, okay, I'm making mid six figures, right? I'm doing really well. I can afford a $260 dinner. No big deal. You know,
once
like,
in a while.
No, know. Like twice a week, three times a week.
What?
Yeah. You know, and then little things come up, like little, just little
poor
things come
kid,
up.
Oh, they don't have money for their like school and stuff.
Yeah.
Do you think that it might be have something to do with like Americans are not good at math? That's why they're not sensitive to number?
Americans are not good at. Maybe that's it, though. I don't know. I think my friends are pretty good at math.
Yeah, I mean, you're not bad. You're
yeah,
better
I don't
than
think
me.
That's it. I think it's. I just think it's like a chronic overspending problem. It's hard to put. It's a behavioral tick that it's really hard to get rid of because spending is a huge part of your lifestyle. You know, it's like swiping that card to. Have dinner or whatever is just part of the lifestyle. You just get used to it and you just do it. And then it's not like you can't pay it, right? It's not like my friends aren't paying the bill. They're paying the bill. They're not going underwater with this stuff. It's just, they could be saving so much more money and they're not. That's all.
But,
and I just think it's silly.
But don't you think saving is very important?
It's incredibly important.
Yeah, but American, they barely have any saving.
Americans, yeah, I mean, it's just, it's cultural. It's not, I don't think it's, I really don't think that most people are that rational when it comes to their decision on their spending.
So do you think like...
It doesn't make sense.
Do you think like Chinese are very rational in terms of like saving? Because I know the Chinese,
relatively speaking,
Chinese people like to save because they feel insecure.
Yeah.
Therefore, there's a lot of motivation to save.
Also, I think that I think the other thing is I just don't think that they're thinking about money in very strange ways. Not Chinese, but like Americans.
Mm-hmm.
I think Americans think of money I don't know what they think of money. I don't think they even really quite understand that money's real.
Huh.
They just think of it as like numbers. Like they're not.
Yeah, but number is still number.
Yeah, but they're. But the thing is, they're not. They're because I think in the U.S., like money is almost. We say stuff like, "Oh, money can be traded for goods and services."
Okay,
that's what we think of money. Money can be traded for goods and services.
Understand that.
Right,
it's a common sense.
Right, and so if that's all money is, then what do you do with it? You trade it for goods and services. Right. So your money, they're like money can be spent. That's why it's money. And so you spend it.
Okay, but don't you need to think about your future?
Right. Well, that's the thing is that what money, I think, actually is time, right?
Mm-hmm.
Money is time. I mean, we get paid on a time basis.
Yes.
And so money is actually units of time. You're trading literal large parts of your life away from money.
Mm-hmm.
So you're sacrificing time for money.
Mm-hmm.
And when you get that money, it's like you can kind of bank it so that you can buy your time back later.
Okay.
Right. Whereas I think if you don't think of it in terms of time, because we don't quite work on a wage basis, right? We're like mostly salaried. So we're not down to like dollars per hour. Right.
Okay. I mean that.
Yeah, we just don't quite have the money and time equivalence down. And so I think we think less about time and we're not thinking about money as a way to buy our time back. We're just thinking about money as a way to buy goods and services. We don't think of it as buying time. So we're comfortable throwing money away because we're like, oh, well, okay, but it's okay because I'm getting something in return for my purchasing, right? Sure, I'm short on cash, but I got all these things. I bought all this stuff. I got all these experiences. Like, it's a fair trade. Money in, money out, right?
Don't people feel depressed if they, like, not having money?
It's probably offset by the joy of spending it. You know, I think is kind of what's going on.
I don't know. I feel very fearful if I spend a lot more than
I can make. I do, too. I never liked that feeling. It always bothered me when I got these credit card bills that were just setting me back. And I was like, Jesus Christ, I'm never going to get ahead like this.
I remember when I know how much I need to get for my mortgage, mm-hmm. I actually kind of freak out.
Mm.
But I'm like, well, at least that's an investment. Mm-hmm. But
yeah.
I don't know. I just feel, why would a culture, I guess because it has to do with the capitalism, that your culture always encourage or even twist the idea of money?
Yeah, and I do think that rise the fact that everything was going up in price, like your house and stuff, it really gave people this feeling like really the primary way of building wealth is not saving cash. It's buying homes. It's buying housing.
At the same time, it's like I don't think all the people have like home in America. I know the ownership not low.
Well, yeah, that's true. But
also most of
it's
people
pretty high.
But also most people they only have one.
Yeah.
They need to live in it. It's not like they can sell it and then exchange for money. Unless you're really smart.
I can only speak for people I know and they're mostly homeowners. So you know.
Well, my friend you know.
Yeah.
Homeowner too.
Yeah.
And they most of them they actually buy in like, you know, all cash.
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah, though, I mean, if you're buying your largest asset keeps going up in price, you're going to feel it's easy to think like I think people are all like these really crappy accountants in their head, mm-hmm. like but they are doing like this weird accounting,
mm-hmm.
and they're looking at their credit card bill and their spending and they're like, ooh, that's a hit. Mm-hmm. But then I think they immediately write it off by saying,
oh, I have a
well
house.
Okay, I'm paying, I've set it off because well I did contribute to my IRA or my 401k and my house is going up in price, so all in all, you know, probably not a big deal. And then you keep, and then it's just the
but then your debt is just keep growing bigger and bigger and bigger because
because they're paying it off. As far as I know, like they're not keeping balances, they're just
okay, but then you're saving nothing.
Right, but they're saying, well, I'm offsetting it because I am saving to my IRA, and okay. I am saving. You know,
I did that too.
I am right. I am putting away principal into the house. The interest is deductible. There's enough stuff that you can rely on to say it's your advantage to write off your spending.
Sometimes I wonder if the deductible thing actually, it's a trap.
It is a trap, but I think this accounting is bullshit. I think it's a lot of just like rationalizing in your head to be like, you know, they're not doing the hard math, I think, or people aren't doing the hard math. I think they're just sitting there thinking, yeah, you know, I mean, this is how most people talk about it. They're like, yeah, that's true, I'm spending a lot, but it's like, you know, I am paying down the principal, my house is going up in value, I'm putting away in the IRA. All in all, I think it's okay. I'm trying to get the spending down, but this month was this, that, you know, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And then at the end of the day, it's kind of like, and I got to say, I'm happy I spent it. I'm happy we went on that vacation. It was a really good time. I'll never forget it.
Okay.
You know, so all in all, it comes down to,
I mean,
I like spending. I like this lifestyle.
Okay.
Yes, I could save more, but no, I'm not going to. At least I'm not going to regret this last month because I had a good time and everyone's happy right now. So I'm not going to just go ahead and fuck that up by insisting that, you know, we cut back on spending. And then what are we going to do? Just sit at home and what, cut the number of channels that we can watch and, you know, not go on vacation. And like, what's the point? Like, what is the point of cutting the spending if we're just going to live, you know? And it's like the future, when you have inflating asset prices for on housing and stuff, you know, you just kind of feel like you're riding the conveyor belt of home appreciation into the future anyway. So what does it matter?
Well, what happened if the economy just go down?
Yeah, they're not thinking about that. They don't believe that.
Okay, but mm-hmm. But it may happen.
Their thinking is like, okay, it may, but I don't care. I mean, it's like, if it happens, it happens. What can I do? But I'm not going to pretend like I care. Like, it's like,
they don't need to prepare for it?
No.
Don't a lot of people going to get
fat? I mean, some do, but I know a lot of people who don't care at all.
Huh.
They're very high risk without, they don't quite know that they're high risk, but they are high risk because they're not really preparing for that. And the other thing is, like, when housing is so expensive, it makes money seem insignificant. Because if you're dealing, people, I have friends that are living in $3 million houses.
Mm-hmm.
And if you live in a $3 million house, despite the fact that there's a load, there's a massive fucking mortgage on it,
mm-hmm.
or whatever. Okay. But the thing is that you've levered into a $3 million asset. You own it. It's mm-hmm. yours. It's $3 million. It's worth $3 million. It is yours. There's a mortgage on it. Okay, but fine. It's yours.
But
it makes something like a couple hundred thousand dollars not seem like a big deal. You suddenly feel like you're a millionaire.
But you also need to pay a lot in order to get that $3 million.
Yeah, I know. It's a fucking.
If you do the calculation, you probably need to pay double for it.
I mean, depending
on the the mortgage rate.
Yeah, I mean, like, owning a house is a business. That's what I learned.
Mm-hmm.
Ownership of real estate, even if you live in it,
mm-hmm.
it's a business. Okay. It's running.
Well, I mean,
maintaining a house is just like maintaining commercial property.
Because okay? There's an opportunity cost to us, right? You can buy it versus you rent it.
Yeah, there's operating expenses.
Right.
Right. So. There's expense. There's taxes. There's insurance. There's maintenance. There's all this shit,
mm-hmm.
and you have to budget for that, and you have to, and there's a mortgage on it. There's a lot of like expenses associated with owning a house,
mm-hmm.
and your hope is that the appreciation outweighs all the expenses. And for a long time, it has. And so everyone just, I think that the magic formula for all this spending is housing. That's my feeling. Housing, if you own a house, you really feel like there's a wind constantly blowing in your back that's pushing you forward, despite, you know, you spending a lot or whatever. The home appreciation is this belief that it's going to push you forward.
I guess one of the reasons, because to most people, which to me it's kind of true, the most expensive stuff that you own actually is the house. It's not the saving. Yeah.
And plus, the higher, the more expensive your home, the bigger the potential for appreciation when you sell. So, you know, people can expect that a $1.5 million house can appreciate quickly to $2.2 million, right? Which has happened
over
$700,000 swing in equity, right? That can be realized. So there were, you know, it is possible to see these huge appreciations and realize on them, but not most people don't. Most people just hold on to the house. They don't really sell
because, but the fact is, like, mm-hmm. if you sell your house at a gain,
mm-hmm.
but you only have one house,
yeah.
but you actually, in order to realize a gain, you actually need to move somewhere else.
Yeah, and then you just put it into another house. Yeah, right. You have to downsize.
Yeah, so
no one's willing to do that. That's why I think housing appreciation at the end of the day isn't the magic wealth creator that we thought it was, because you always get tied down with a house. I mean, it does help you ladder up to nicer and nicer houses, but I don't think it's quite the wealth generator that people think it is. That's my
opinion. Meaning the real estate value increase actually gives people some sort of illusion.
Because now I heard that, because the goal would be you ladder up, you go from you go up the housing chain, and then when you're retired, you have a really expensive house, and then you sell it for cash and downsize, and the difference you can live off of. But see, that's broken now. Right? So a lot of older boomers that are trying to sell out, cash out of their house and retire, they can't do it. And not only that, but they're finding actually that the houses that they want to downsize to are actually too expensive for them anyway. So that whole, I'm going to ride the escalator up and then cruise on the way down, I think is kind of, I was just reading something about it yesterday. That plan doesn't work that well right now. First of all, they can't sell their house.
And second, right now.
Yeah. And there's very little inventory for them to buy as a downsize option.
Well, right now you said the real estate market to some areas is pretty much like frozen.
Yeah, it's frozen. Like mortgages are down like something like 85-90%. So,
well, of course, because the interest rate right now is so high.
Yeah, I think the 30-year average is almost
7.
Eight. No, it's almost 8.
Okay,
at this point, yeah, it's shockingly high. Yeah. So real estate—that's the thing. I think real estate long term is—it's probably go. I mean, I think the era of quick appreciation is like over. You're not going to get. There's no way you're going to get houses that, you know, double in value in a few short years or whatever the hell people were expecting. That's not going to happen anymore.
I mean, it did happen in the past.
It did happen, but we know how that happened, right?
It's a very fake bubble.
Yeah. I mean, there were shocks that led people to buy, you know, scramble into certain specific markets and bid the price up. Plus, plus a lot of, cheap mortgages. It's pretty simple. It's really not that complicated.
Yeah,
everyone comes armed with a huge mortgage. Everyone that goes to put in an offer has a huge mortgage.
Well, my friend have a lot.
Yeah. And cash. I mean, people do come in with cash, too.
So
with loads of cash and loads of debt. Person who wins, there's a bidding war. The person who wins is overpaying for sure in a bidding war. I mean, it's always the person who's most reckless with their bid that wins. And so it's just a bunch of reckless bidders winning houses. The housing just goes through the roof because there's just so much money available. And so the most reckless person wins.
But just because the money available doesn't mean that you don't need to pay it back.
Well, to them, it's a win. It's you can't lose because paying a mortgage back when your house price is increasing is trivial, right? Because it's like, of course I can pay it back. The collateral underlying the loan has gone up in value, right? So, of course I can pay an $800,000 mortgage back when my home equity keeps going up.
Yeah, but how much longer can it keep going up?
They pretty much indefinitely was the belief.
But then you're...
People do not... Still, to this day, people don't believe that real estate could go down. They honestly don't believe
it. But it actually went down.
Yeah, no, they don't believe it. Or if they do, they say it's a temporary thing. It's a glitch.
Well, I mean, it's a glitch, but you don't know how long the glitch gonna last.
The people are thinking literally maybe a few months,
A lot of time when it go down. When
you know why people are buying houses?
Oh.
Because they're saying, okay, go ahead and write the mortgage down today for that much money. And then you could just refi in a couple years when the rates drop.
I think that is... I see that from my coworker.
Yeah, that is such a bad risk to take. I wouldn't assume that rates are going to drop in 2 years.
Which I don't see.
And even if rates did drop, it's going to be because of a recession. In which case, there's another reason why your house will go down in value. Because there's a recession. Right? So, if the rates do drop, it's going to be because there's a recession. And that means that there's even more pressure on your house. So... if your house goes down in value, you're not going to be able to refinance it because your LTV ratios are all fucked up.
So it's a trap. I think people who are taking mortgages now, thinking that they're going to refi, they're trapped.
Ah, maybe that's what my friend... Wait, I think my friend got it at 3 point something.
Okay, that's fine.
But she got ARM.
Okay, that's not good.
Yeah. I just don't know how many years.
Yeah, ARMs are not good.
But you said if you can sell within certain amount of year, then you may actually end up with a profit with ARM. If the housing price keep going up.
Yeah, if housing prices goes up. Yeah, of course. But I don't think it's going to.
I know, but that's the problem because, like, my friend bought a house in Bay Area, near Bay Area. I'm like, she bought it when just simply 5-6 years ago, it's like half of the price.
Yeah, she doubled it.
And that is like the high point that I have seen. I'm like, that's crazy. But I can kind of get it because she pay a lot in rent.
Mm.
So right now, I think she was looking at how much you pay in rent and how much you have for down pay from her in-law and how much you paying right now for mortgage. And she realized that actually, if she willing to pay that down payment, then everything just adds up pretty much the same.
Yeah,
But she got a way bigger, like, you know, double the space. And something that's like, you know, put under her name. I think that's what she was thinking. And that's why she's willing to, you know, pay more for the house.
Yeah. I think a lot of them are just going to get screwed.
So you mean like, not simply, you know,
Their housing is going to be underwater. Like, mortgage is going to be more than the house is worth at some point.
Because the median price right now in her area is like already went down.
Went down, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, it's going to be underwater. So, you know, I think a lot of people are going to get screwed by this.
Well, did they?
And you're talking about households that were really relying on home appreciation. So I think they were spending. It's an unrealized gain, right?
Mm-hmm.
There's a difference between a realized gain and an unrealized gain. An unrealized gain is just simply the value of an asset that you own theoretically went up in price. Theoretically. Meaning you have no idea what you would get for it on the market, but you have a rough idea. And so you have an unrealized gain, right? Meaning, sure, a fair accounting of your balance sheet,
mm-hmm.
your personal balance sheet, probably should reflect the appreciation of your house, right? But you didn't realize on it, so it's just theoretical.
Meaning, like, the unrealized gain is still pending. You don't know which way you're gonna go.
Yeah, you just know at this particular moment in time, it's theoretically worth this much. Theoretically, right? You never know if your particular house is going to sell for that price, but you have a pretty strong indication that it would, right? So you have an indicator that your house is worth houses are not pure commodities, but they're pretty close. So, like, you know, if you live in a neighborhood and a very similar house sold for, you know, $1 million, you know, it's safe to say yours is probably worth about the same. Maybe there's a little bit of difference or whatever, but fundamentally you're around the $1 million mark. And so you're going to feel like the additional equity that you gained off depreciation, it's going to feel like additional income. Right. If you bought a $650,000 house, which is appreciated to $1 million, you're going to feel like you have earned $350,000.
What make you guys think like that?
You have an asset that's worth $1 million now.
Yeah, but what make you guys think like that? Is it some sort of like TV show? Is it something that you
learned? No, that's just how it works. So if you have, let's say I have a bunch of stocks and those stocks triple in value or double in value, whatever the hell those things were doing. I mean, I get my statement, my 401k statement or my brokerage statement. It's going to tell me the value of my holdings. And it's going to tell me, like, your stocks doubled in value. And if you wanted to capitalize on it, because stocks are super liquid, I could capitalize on it right now, right? So if the housing feels the same way, even though it's a little different because stocks are very liquid financial assets, I could sell them at any point instantly for cash. Whereas the house, it's very complicated because it's like, then I've got to find another place to live. You know, it takes time to sell. It's not easy to sell.
But even for stock, it can just drop within a day. And then
yes, that's right. Yep. But probably not likely
that that would happen. Though it has happened, but I mean, you know. Yeah, I mean, stocks are risky. So if all your net worth, if all your worth is your wealth is in stocks, you know, you're exposed to equity price risk.
And the same thing like the housing price. It's not crate on, you know, crate yeah, on stone.
Yeah, it's not real. Like, so it's just, I think a lot of this, this what they call like mark-to-market accounting gives you a very false sense of the value of, or the wealth that you're sitting on. You know what I mean? Like, so people own a house, and because the house is theoretically going up in value, they're in their mind adding the appreciation in a general way. They're not being very rigorous about it, but they're taking the fact that their house is going up in value as kind of a as kind of like its income, like virtual income. Right. So they're feeling richer because their house is getting more expensive, and they're seeing like, oh, yeah, this house is now worth this much.
But, do you agree with this kind of?
No, it's a stupid
idea. Just where did the people got that from?
That idea?
Uh-huh.
They got it from the fact that they're getting indications in the mail from realtors saying what their house is worth.
So they just.
I mean, if I show you a bank state or your brokerage statement that says that your stocks doubled in price, you're going to feel richer. And you are, in a way, you are richer.
Yeah, in a way, but it's not in your pocket yet.
You could easily put it in your pocket, right? So with the house, I think it tricks you into thinking like this the gain on the value of your home is easy to tap. And in fact, it kind of is if you want to take more debt out of the house. Like, they will credit you the additional value as collateral value, so you can take more debt in the form of a HELOC if you want.
You even want to take more debt?
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
But the value of your home equity is usually the largest asset in a household's balance sheet. And so if that asset is going up, and it, as people point out, it's like the one asset that you can leverage, meaning I can borrow money to buy this asset. Most assets, I can't do that. I can't. Very hard. It's very poorly advised that I go borrow money to buy stocks.
No, of course not, because you don't know, you know, whether it go up or down.
Yeah, it's so it's highly discouraged to borrow. You can do it, but it's highly discouraged to borrow money to buy stocks, right? But everyone borrows money to buy houses. So it's called a leveraged asset. So the leverage that you can get is dependent in many in it's dependent on how much mortgage you can afford.
See, I
and
don't...
so when mortgage rates are really low, the leverage is really high. And so you can multiply your income by a lot. Meaning, like, the amount of house that you can afford in dollar terms is really high because mortgage rates are low, meaning you could get very high leverage rates. So I can walk in with $100,000 and I can easily buy a $1.2 million house. And your income levels, your income requirements are low compared to what you would imagine it would take to buy something that expensive. But the policies are all there for you. Low rates means lower income requirements and lower down payments.
Yeah, but you know, like, my friend who, like, would bought a house all in cash, they never need to worry about or even thinking about, you know, leveraging anything because they have enough saving. You know, that's how they even to have, like, all cash to begin with. I mean, not all of them are rich, but, you know, they buy within their means.
Yeah.
So lavish thing is like, except for mortgage, I mean, I got it, but
I get the feeling people should be doing mortgages closer to like 50%, meaning like you should put a 50% down payment and do like 50%.
That's really hard.
Yeah, but you know, I think that that might be a more normal thing than people putting 10% down.
But if you pick it, paying like 50%. That's a lot.
Well, the housing prices are going to have to come down.
Oh, yeah, of course.
Yeah. But I'm saying, like, it would be more normal to me for people to only leverage about 50%. So it's like, for a $500,000 house, I put $250,000 down and borrow $250,000.
Well, that's all.
And I think that's a decent...
But that means the housing price needs to drop a lot in order to... I think it should
drop to levels where people are paying, like, closer to 50% down for their house.
How much would that be?
Ooh. I mean, people are... Like, literally, we had almost 0%, like, no money down or, like, 5% down. You know, it's crazy. Because, you know why? Because they really keep... No matter what, like, they banks make money off of the interest... So the lower the rate, the harder it is to make money off a mortgage, right? Because the interest rates are low.
Mm-hmm.
So they want bigger mortgages. So they're they're encouraged to write larger volumes because the rates are low. So they need bulk. And
but then if something hit and nobody can pay for it.
Yeah, I know.
Isn't the bank gonna end up with tons of houses just sitting right there?
Yeah, that's why there's a structural problem in housing. This is why we always have a housing crisis, because we're so interested in making money off the financing. The whole industry is geared towards that. The banks have huge mortgage, pipelines, and that's a huge engine of the banking sector. And so they're always constantly encouraged to write more and more mortgage products. They want to do more debt. They make money off debt creation. So the banks would love for more people to... In fact, now they're still doing... The banks are scrambling to try and encourage people to borrow at these rates. They don't give a shit. They just want to write mortgages.
I feel like that might be one of the reasons why the depression in America is quite high.
I think that people are getting scammed.
Of course they're getting scammed!
Yeah. You know. But as long as you had the conveyor belt of home appreciation, you're bringing new buyers to the table.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's how this thing works. How does... housing appreciate all the time.
Mm-hmm.
You have new money coming into the system.
Oh, is
especially
it why,
at the bottom.
Is it why there's a lot of like foreign investor and stuff?
Yeah, you would need to get foreign investors in. You need to get first-time home buyers. So the government has a lot of first-time home buyer incentives. Yeah,
why? I got it.
Because without first-time home buyers, the entire thing shuts down. You need buyers coming in from the bottom, pushing the whole thing up. That's how it works. You got to get buyers in from the bottom. And so it pushes everyone up.
So basically, the government encouraged everybody just like become a homeowner.
Yeah. So all the policies are written, the tax policies, all those things.
I still feel like the tax thing is the trap. Because even though they send you the money back.
Oh, it's not just tax deductions. There's all sorts of other parts of the real estate. Of the tax code that favor this.
Like what?
Like there's special tax rules around the securitization of mortgages. They're called REMIC rules.
But still.
Real estate investment trusts are tax-free. So if you create an investment fund that invests just in real estate, there's no tax, right? So there's no entity tax on REITs.
Oh, I think I missed that part.
You know, the real estate investment trust, REITs. Yeah, REITs are tax-free. So real estate has a special pass when it comes to tax.
No wonder why the bubble is so big.
I mean, look it up. REIT rules, REMIC rules, income tax deduction. Those are all major, major tax incentive programs to grease the rails for mortgage debt creation. So the government's heavily encouraging these real estate speculation.
Now I remember before Trump, I actually got like some tax refund.
Yeah.
Because of my real estate tax, the property tax.
Most people are pretty fucking stupid, you know? If they know their house is going up in value, they're just going to spend as if that money were real. It's just what happens.
I still don't get like where the idea comes from.
I think it's pretty obvious. If I'm sitting in a house, I paid $300,
But like I said,
I paid half the amount. I only put a little bit down anyway. I only had to save $100,000, and it took me years to do it. And I put that into a house, and the house is worth $1 million. I levered it 10x.
Okay.
You know, right off the bat, just the mere fact that I own a $1 million house is going to make me feel wealthier. Even though it's completely debt to me, right? It's written down as debt. Okay, but then again, I looked at the monthly statement, it is within my budget, and boom, I get a $1 million asset sitting on my balance sheet. You feel wealthy.
because we're not really good accountants.
It kind of feels like a drug.
Yeah, it is. It gives you unrealistic expectations of your current financial situation. It gives people unrealistic expectations of how wealthy they actually are.
I'm sure some people make money out of it. I mean, that's how Donald Trump becomes so rich, right?
Yeah, well, he was a real estate developer, so.
Okay. Well, I mean, similar.
Yeah. I mean, real estate developers are realizing the, you know, they're selling it for cash, right? They're taking short-term debt to actually build real estate and then flipping it into the market. So they're making money just off creating real estate. They're playing a totally different game.
But still real estate game.
The real estate game, yeah. But
they're way ahead of us.
They're way ahead, yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Okay, so now we get to the conclusion that actually the real estate is the one that drives people.
I think it's the primary engine.
Wow, yeah. Okay.
I think real estate's the primary engine, and now we're seeing a reversal in the dynamics of the real estate game, which is like there's a lot of downward pressure now. Rates are too high. There's very few buyers.
Mm-hmm.
There's going to be more sellers coming online when the recession starts to take, you know, a lot of people, like, they can't generate income off their investment properties anymore, so they can be forced to sell.
Oh, yeah, didn't you say
people
they...
People are going to start losing their job.
Yeah, didn't you say the government tried to, like, destroy the Airbnb stuff first?
Yeah, yeah. So I think that the government... I mean, my going theory is that they actually want a recession because they feel the reality is that they think that productivity is down and basically, like, people are not disciplined. And they don't want to work anymore.
Simply meaning that if you're not, like, rich and powerful, they want you to work for them.
They know... They being, like, the Federal Reserve and the banks and all the people who are, like, have a heavy influence on the planning of the economy.
Mm-hmm.
They know that you cannot have a healthy national economy where people are just doing real estate speculation.
Uh-huh.
It's not... That's not a real economy. Real estate speculation is it's a pyramid scheme.
So you mean like they want you to do the real?
Yeah, they're not dumb. I mean, they know that we need to get into a more higher productive economy. We can't just have people buying homes all the time. You need actually to make stuff. We need to reinvigorate the manufacturing sector. We don't. We can't even make enough weapons to send to Ukraine. We can't make enough masks. We can't make enough anything. So we can't make enough chips. We can't make enough this. We can't make enough that. We're dependent on imports, right? And I think suddenly the people in charge kind of realize this.
It's a problem.
It's a real problem. And they're like, wait, our economy is not – we're not self-sufficient. We're relying on China. And they got the message. They're not stupid. That's the thing. They're not dumb. They know what's going on.
So are you saying that they try to bring the manufacturing back?
Of course they're trying to bring manufacturing back. And they know that one of the big problems with bringing manufacturing back is not the willingness of companies to relocate here. It's not even about the salaries. Mm-hmm. They're willing to pay more for workers here.
Mm-hmm.
You just give tax incentives or what. You can make it work. The problem is there's nobody to hire. They can't find workers. They literally can't find people to hire, qualified workers. And so they realize, like, too many Americans have grown decadent and they're just, you know, sitting back and doing real estate speculation, right? And they're financing everything. So they're living lavish lifestyles off of credit, cheap credit at really low interest rates, using housing as a primary form of collateral.
And you expect those people can make cheap.
If their housing equity goes under, if they have negative equity in their house, meaning that they owe more money on the house than it's worth, right?
Mm-hmm.
Those people are fucked.
Mm-hmm.
And they're going to have to go back to work.
Yeah, but what kind of job can they get? Would the government provide any job opportunity for those people?
Yeah, maybe not. But I think the point is that they want to create what they call a higher sense of worker insecurity. which is the term that the Fed uses for it. And they've said that worker insecurity is one way to keep inflation low while having relatively high rates of employment. So their goal is to make everyone move to more precarious forms of their goal is to just be like, look, it's going to be a little bit harder for you to get a job. Yeah. And you need, plus the big thing is they want you to enter the workforce. They don't want people sitting back and just saying, you know what? I don't want to work. And I'm just going to retire. I'm going to retire on my property values. The government is trying to take that away. They've realized at this point that real estate appreciation has gone way too far.
Mm-hmm.
And it's starting to create negative incentives for workers in terms of contributing to overall productivity. It's hurting the national economy. And they want to put an end to it.
Okay.
Okay. So I think going forward, we should not count on real estate as a primary generator of wealth. Like it's going to be hard to change that mindset.
Meaning like,
and they're going to crush it. They've already said we're not going back to low interest rates. Just know that your house is not going to go up in value anymore.
I think every time the government do a big change, mm-hmm. they're going to sacrifice some people.
Yeah. And so they're trying to get rid of the housing, the house appreciation conveyor belt where people were just kind of coasting.
Mm-hmm.
And then because now it's there's not enough people that are desperate for a job and people are not working that hard and they're not picking up new skills and they're not, you know, they're just sitting back and playing landlord or whatever on Airbnb. And so the government is 100, in my opinion, totally aware of this, completely aware of the problem, and they are trying to reinstill a sense of, I can't just rely on real estate anymore. I have to go out and develop skills and work a job and get back in the workforce.
You mean like...
And not just as a mortgage.
It's going to be a lot of people, they're like, going to face a life-changing event.
Yes.
That they need to be like, go back to the workforce,
yeah,
and you know,
or severely downsize their lifestyle. You know, because like I think of the housing, the housing boom as sort of like trade, like it was just this big wind that was pushing everyone forward, and now it's not only gone but it's blowing in the other direction.
Mm-hmm.
That it's undoubtedly going to massively change people's lives.
Huh. I wondered how that would be.
It's going to be awful for a lot of people. Huh. And they're going to face these new, you know, suddenly they're people who felt quite wealthy are going to feel quite poor because the reality was that housing was never just a thing that you owned. It was a complex set of assets and liabilities. The liabilities were both the size of the liability and the value of the asset. Were dependent on financing costs, right? The ability to borrow cheaply. Mm-hmm. If people can't borrow cheaply, the value of the asset is going to go down.
Mm-hmm.
And the potential liabilities for if you have an arm or if you want to, you know, flip into another house, that's going to be much higher, right? So like your debt liabilities are going to be what you owe in terms of debt interest is going to be much higher. You know, like, I think if you go from like 3.5 to 8%,
wow,
you know, the total interest that you pay almost triples.
Yeah, I calculated. Yeah. If you use the calculator, you will see.
Yeah. So you're, you know, the principal is, you know, the principal value of your house at 8%, I think you're only, assuming like 20%, I think you're only paying less than a half. I mean, I would say a little more than a third.
Mm-hmm.
Of your total outlay is going to go to the principal of the house or the actual value of the house that you purchased it for.
Mm-hmm.
And the rest is just interest. So 60-70%, let's say 65% of what you pay in the life of the mortgage is simply interest.
Oh, yeah, that's what accelerates.
The vast majority of what you're paying is just for interest.
Yeah, but you have the way to accelerate to pay for the principal.
You can do that, yeah. But I'm saying if you go by the regular 30% amortization schedule, At 8%, vast majority of the amount of money that you're paying goes to interest. Whereas at 3.5,
mm-hmm.
I think majority of it actually goes to principal.
Oh, okay, okay.
Yeah,
okay.
That's how big a swing it is.
Wow.
Right, so it's a big deal. I mean, going from 3.5 to 8 is a very big deal.
Oh, you can see that by using the calculator.
Just go to the calculator. It'll kind of shock you.
Yeah, I saw that. Yeah. I saw that. I'm like, when I see the 8% versus like, when my friend get the mortgage, like probably like 3%, that's a huge change.
Mortgages are very tricky because they recapitalize, meaning that the 8%, it keeps accumulating on the unpaid principal. It's not a one-time thing. It's compound interest. So the swing from 3.5 to 8 is very material because you're talking about a compounding 8% on an amortization schedule.
That's how I see the government can control the market.
Yeah. And they are absolutely committed, I think, to crashing the housing market. They have had enough. They have had enough of people becoming little mini landlords. They've had enough people. They've had enough of this Airbnb, entrepreneur shit. They're done. They're like, dude, no, you're not. The future is not in you buying ever more real estate. The future is you getting back to work.
Don't you think that even if the government doesn't do anything, the market gonna crash regardless? It might be slower.
I don't know. I mean, yeah, I mean, at some point you run out of new buyers. It's just that simple.
Mm-hmm.
At some point you just run out of new buyers. But people are still going to be trying to crowd up into, right? So, yeah, I don't know. It's hard to say. But now, by doing what they've done, I think they've really accelerated the reversal in the housing market. You're already seeing it. Right now, I would say it's just not a good time to buy a house. I just think it's – unless there's like you have a lot of other reasons in your favor to do it. I think right now, because rents are falling too.
I don't see my rent go falling.
Yeah, but generally speaking, I mean, New York City is always fucking terrible, but just rent for a while. Just sit on the sidelines.
But some rent are very expensive, like in the Manhattan.
Yeah, that's true. But look, like I said, we know some friends, let's say a full $1 million in cash mm-hmm. to buy a place all cash.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they could have waited and put that $1 million into just short-term bonds and earned, $5,500, $6,000 a month just on interest.
What happened if the housing price kept rising? I think that's their fear.
Yeah, that's their fear. I just don't think that they needed to worry about that. I think that there's
but
no way.
But still, you don't know, so they rather to play it safe.
You kind of do know. You kind of do know. If interest rates go that high,
mm-hmm.
Prices are going to come down.
But you don't know how long that will last.
It won't last very long. I just don't think that – I don't know why. This is a very obvious thing. But for some reason, people have been beaten – it's been beaten into their head that real estate never goes down. And I don't know where that belief comes from, but they just believe that real estate prices cannot go down. I don't know where they get that belief.
Maybe based on the historical data.
Yeah, because it's been positive for so long. But that doesn't mean it's not going to come down. In fact, that might point to a bigger crash, right? If you haven't let pressure out for a long time and then suddenly you pop the bubble this dramatically to go from, people were paying like below 3% for mm-hmm. their mortgages.
Mm-hmm.
And now they're paying 8% in just less than a year. This mm-hmm. has happened, right?
Mm-hmm.
That is a massive, massive blow to the amount of money that can come into the market to the point where now the amount of money coming in through mortgages has dropped 90%.
Okay.
That's a huge blow to the market.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know why people think that that's not going to affect the course of pricing. They're insane to think that. The only reason is because they just don't believe it. They won't believe it until it happens. So fundamentally, they're just saying, like, I won't believe it until it actually happens, at which point it's too late.
But it might take a while before they can actually see the big change.
It could. I don't think it's going to take as long as they think.
We'll see.
It's not going to be years. People can't hold out that long. You know? I mean, you already know people are losing their jobs, like, you know, or they have to sell because they have to change another job in another city, or people can't just sit in their house indefinitely. There's always an ambient pressure to sell, and then into a recession, there'll be an even heightened pressure to sell. I'm saying, look, when you make financing expensive, much more expensive than it has been, all the dynamics of the housing market are going to flip. It's going to be reversed, right? So it's just like bonds.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so like bonds right now, like people are losing money hand over fist if they had bought bonds, and that's a reversal. For the longest time, you bought bonds, you made money. Why? Because the yields kept dropping, right? So every year, people made less and less money on bonds,
mm-hmm.
which means that your bonds went up in price.
Okay.
Right? So bonds always made money because of exactly what's going on with houses go up in price, right? Bonds go up in price. Everything and stocks were going up in price. Everything moves up together. Right? Bonds, stocks, real estate, all moving up. And then once it reverses, they all move down at the same time.
Oh, do you think that we're going to be like Japan?
Maybe. I don't know. I mean, I don't know. That's a long term. Their real estate has been basically declining for like decades.
Oh, yeah. That's what it is.
It never goes up. And so their view on housing is very different from us. They just think of housing as a way to throw your money away. Right. They don't think of it as a long-term investment. They're like,
because they need to live in one.
They think of it as a depreciating asset, like a car. That's why there's all these houses that they can't get rid of. Because they're like, why would you buy this house? It's just going to depreciate to zero. They actually have to get Westerners to come and buy it because only Westerners have the mindset that houses are these appreciating assets. Whereas Japanese think of them as just these decaying, depreciating assets. So they're like, I don't know, these Westerners want to come in and buy it. Okay.
Is the rent pretty low?
Yeah, rents are low. Yeah.
Okay. I mean, if the rent is low, there's no point in buying.
That's what I'm saying. So Japanese are not particularly... Tokyo is actually a pretty inexpensive place.
Oh, I saw that. I saw the video.
You know?
On YouTube.
Yeah. So, you know...
But that's still a lot of money.
And it's Tokyo. It's a very desirable city. It's not that expensive.
Yeah, but...
This idea that real estate has to be super expensive is not the case. It's not built into the system that real estate's got to be super fucking expensive like it is now. But we have been taught to think of real estate as, like, basically a form of gold. It's like gold.
Well, if you see the increase, it's almost, like, unreachable.
Yeah, but it was all artificial.
But you don't know how long you have to wait until it becomes...
The conditions are over. It's already changed.
Well, I mean, we can see that now.
Yeah, it's already changed. And people are not accepting that this is a real change. They keep thinking that the government's going to... This is a temporary trend. My point is, I don't think it's temporary. I think this is a permanent or fairly permanent state of affairs where we are going to see housing... underperforming as an asset for like a while.
So do you think that like after people realize it and see the reality, they would change their spending behavior?
Maybe, yeah. I think we're going to become a higher saving economy. I think people are, once they see that the future is not guaranteed through housing, being like this engine of wealth creation, for you, where it's just passive wealth creation.
Mm-hmm.
Buy yourself a house; it will make you rich. It just will grow like a fucking magic egg,
mm-hmm.
or like a golden. But those days are over, and so we're going to realize just how much of our thinking was affected by real estate frenzy. And I think, you know, we're going to have to go back down to like more. Realistic kinds of budgeting and stuff. Like, you can't just rely... You can't just keep projecting that your house is going to go up and up and up and up. It's not going to happen.
So don't you think that it's actually pretty good for the mindset? To go back to more, like, practical...
Yeah, but...
Rather than, like, leveraging everything.
I think so. I thought the whole housing thing was just super stressful.
Well, but I see a lot of people jump right into it. A lot of my friends during, you know, the bubble
time. Yeah, I mean, I think a lot of them were going to get crushed, personally.
Well, not the one we all cash.
That's no guarantee either, because...
Well, they can shrink in value, but it's not like they're going to be crushed. Not as much as the one who's holding my mortgage.
Mm, but here's the thing, is when your house doesn't go up in value...
Mm-hmm.
It's not just the mortgage that's one of the expenses. You have all sorts of, especially in like New York City. Mm-hmm. God, I mean, the maintenance is sky high.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And
yeah.
It's well beyond the listed bill. You know that. You get special assessed all the time.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Your property taxes, always going up. Okay. The city is going to tax the shit out of property going forward because they have huge holes in their budget. So, yeah, you don't have mortgage expense, but you have all these other expenses.
But if you
have... And at the same time, it's very possible that the value of your home is going to go down. So you overpaid for it anyway. So the $1 million that you put into it is now worth $940, $930, $920, $890. That doesn't feel good.
Well,
that's a direct loss of equity. I put $1 million in and now the thing's worth $890.
But if you only live in there.
Yeah, but it doesn't feel good. It just doesn't feel good. You know? They could be losing equity faster than paying rent. You know, if it's a particularly bad year, mm-hmm. they could be losing equity at a faster rate than what they could be earning by renting the place out. Mm-hmm. They would lose renting an equivalent would be less than the amount of equity that they're losing in terms of market
value disappearing. So it's better to just rent.
Yeah, I would not stake $1 million in a piece of real estate right now, even without a mortgage. Mm-hmm. Though, I mean, some people need a place. They needed a place. I get it. But it's no, just because you don't have a mortgage does not save you from the problems. You know, loss of equity is loss of equity, period.
But that's the time when people wake up.
Yeah.
And change their behavior in spending.
Yeah. And, you know, it's going to be tricky on the way down because it's like, at what point do people who need a house jump in? I have no idea. Like, do you wait a year, 2 years? You know, because, like, it's like catching a falling knife. Okay, maybe housing price drop, but it might keep dropping. So if I buy, then... I have no, you know, it could immediately drop after I buy it.
Well, it depends on how the government want to manipulate it, right?
Yeah. I suspect the government is in full panic mode in terms of the employment problems going on. I think they think that workers are just becoming super lazy. People don't want to work. There's a general loss of energy, discipline, et cetera. And they're going to manufacture a crisis to get people to come back to their senses. And frankly, I don't think it's really going to work, but I think they're going to break a lot of people. I think they're going to break people's spirits. If on top of all the things that are going on now with the wars, with the violence, the crime and all this shit, with barely being able to afford their expenses and whatever, and then you add on top of that a recession, look, people are just going to lose hope. I don't think that people are going to be like, oh, yeah, you know, everything's shit. I feel reinvigorated. Now I'm ready. I'm motivated to go. No, people are going to – their spirits are going to be broken, and you're going to have chaos. So that's another reason why I am very non-committal with money
mm-hmm.
is because I look in the future, and I don't know why everyone's so goddamn positive about it. I'm like, guys, there's so many problems. That if you're realistic about it, you might be a little bit more cautious about investing in a permanent way. I would say light touch on the investment, very liquid, low risk assets. It's very easy to find good returns because the interest rates are high. Take advantage of that. That's a government subsidy. Their government is basically paying you. They're just giving free money to you.
Mm-hmm.
In exchange for your cash, even your short-term cash.
Mm-hmm.
Why? Because the government is trying to mop up liquidity. There's too much money floating out there. That's inflation.
Mm-hmm.
That's why they're paying you for you to park your money away for a year. Mm-hmm. Okay, so you put your, I'm taking the cash off the table. I'm not going to spend it for the next year. And they're like, okay, great. I'm going to give you 5.5% return mm-hmm. on that. That's how badly I want you to not spend. Mm. Take it. That's government subsidy. There's the government is literally spending like trillions of dollars to pay you for your cash. That, you know, so I would just take advantage of that. And not, and just, you know, just low risk, highly liquid. I mean, you can, of course you can always sell your treasuries at a moment's notice. So there's no liquidity risk. There's no risk. So I would say just buy short-term treasuries and just wait.
Don't spend too much.
Save.
Start saving.
Save. Stay on the sidelines and just let this shit play out because it's a mess. I'm telling you, people who own a lot of assets right now are nervous because the liquidity's dried up. They can't get out. If they had to get out, they would take a loss anyway. They're just hoping at this point. They're just hoping for everything to work out. And maybe it will, but I personally wouldn't bet on it. And so I would not join them right now. Meaning, if you have a lot of assets, maybe you're stuck. I don't know. Hold on. Cross your fingers. If you can unload some of those assets right now at a good price, I would do it. If you have extra real estate and you need cash, right now there's like not many listings. The housing prices are still pretty steady because nobody's selling. Well, get ahead of the sellers that are going to come online next year. So sell it now. I think if you're thinking about selling real estate that you have, I would sell it now rather than later if you need the money. Otherwise, if you think you can hold on to it forever, who cares? But if you think you're going to need to sell it in a few years or whatever, I would sell it now. Because once you don't, you know, you want to get ahead of all the other sellers. Right? But otherwise, I would stay low asset, light asset light, because I don't trust where prices are going. I have no idea where they're going.
So I'd rather just be, like, hold on to cash.
Hold on to cash.
Yeah, the cash is king.
Cash is king. Whenever there's falling asset values, cash is king.
Whenever you're not sure what's like gonna happen,
cash is king. Especially when you know that all the momentum is against prices. You know, everyone's looking for cash. Everyone's looking for your cash to get out. They need your cash to get out, meaning they need you to buy. Mm-hmm. And that's when I think you can be maybe a little bit more – you could be choosy, right? You could be like, okay, well, if everything's on sale, then I can start looking for things to buy. But I think it's too early.
Oh, you mean like it's too early for a buyer?
Yeah, I want to see panic selling before I buy. What? I want to see desperate sellers.
That was like panic buying for the past 3 years.
Yeah, exactly. Panic buyers – or panic anything is bad. Panic buying is bad. Panic selling is bad. You want to be opportunistically buying and opportunistically selling. Mm-hmm. So you opportunistically sell when everything's really hot. You want to get out. And you opportunistically buy when everyone's panic selling. And you're like, okay, well, everything's on fucking sale. Let's see what I can do. Let's see what I can buy. Right now, I think it's a kind of transition period where I don't think things have fallen enough in price to be as an opportunistic buyer to be like, oh yeah, there's some really great deals. It's good. I'd still give it time. Mm-hmm. That's my bet. I mean, there's no guarantee, but I would bet that that's what's going to happen.
Well, if you think, you know, whatever team said is logical.
Then what do you think? I think it makes sense.
Well, I haven't bought a new place yet, right?
Yeah. I don't feel any sense of urgency.
Well, I have been waiting for so long.
Yeah.
And I'm like, I feel like when I was in school, they taught us like in finance that like it's always opportunity when you hold on to cash. Maybe not as much as like, you know, people who leveraging.
Yeah.
But there's a cycle that you whoever hold on to cash, they always an opportunity to squeeze in.
Yeah.
When everything should go down.
Well, that's how you got your house.
Oh, yeah. That's how I got.
You an opportunistic buyer.
My mom, not
yeah.
me.
So I mean, it's very like you buy when everyone's selling. You know, you can get amazing.
Yeah, that's
deals.
A lot easier. Yeah. Because like after a couple of years after me, my coworker wanna buy a place.
Yeah.
He can barely get it.
Yeah. But see, that's the thing. When asset prices are going up, the person with the most assets and the highest leverage wins. The person who's most reckless with debt, with the biggest balance sheet, that you know, their income can barely cover, but you know, they've maxed out,
mm-hmm.
that person wins. Because they have maximum amount of leverage, and all the returns that they're getting on asset appreciation are going to be multiplied by their leverage. So they're going to win. And so a lot of reckless behavior was rewarded for years, decades even, right? The more reckless you were with the spending, the more you were rewarded. And that mentality has taken hold as a kind of culture. And that culture is now going to get
destroyed.
And it's going to be a different culture that takes its place. And that cultural shift is what the government is trying to create. They think it's not the price of groceries that they're worried about.
Mm-hmm.
They don't care about the price of eggs. That's a cover story for what they're really doing.
Mm-hmm.
They really don't give a shit about the price of groceries. They don't. I'm sorry. It's a cover story. What they care about is shifting the culture away from this endless, crazy asset speculation, because they need people to go back to work. They need people to become savers again, and they need people to want to work. They can't, you know, the opposite is when there's cheap credit, it means that I can do all my consumption now
mm-hmm.
and then pay it off later. But people didn't pay it off later. What they waited for was more people to pile in.
Mm-hmm.
So I didn't even have to either I work, save, and then spend, or I borrow, spend, and then work to pay it off. But either way, I'm going to work, right? That's why the government more or less is agnostic about whether rates are high or low. Because if the rates are high, then more people are just going to save, work, save, and then spend.
Mm-hmm.
If the rates are low, they're going to borrow, spend, and then work, right, to pay it off. But if you create the conditions where there's loads of new people coming into the real estate market,
mm-hmm.
what people are going to do is they're going to borrow, spend, and then not work, because they're just going to use the appreciation of the asset caused by all the new money coming into the market instead of working.
Mm-hmm.
That's speculation.
Mm-hmm.
And the lack of working in that cycle is what is causing the government to say, wait, hold on, we got to put an end to this.
Mm-hmm.
Because productivity is falling.
Mm-hmm.
Inflation is just a fancy way of saying productivity is falling.
Mm-hmm.
And in the cycle of either work, save, spend, or borrow, spend, work, they need the work part to come back one way or another.
Well, they're already pushing people back to work.
Yeah, they want people back in the office. They don't want, you know, they want you back in the office. And they want you nervous.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yay.
Yeah, they don't want you sitting pretty going, oh, yeah, I got like a million and a half equity in my house, man, I'm fine. Worst comes to worst, I sell the house. You know,
I'm good.
We just go travel around for a while, you know, or it's good. You know, I'm going to quit my job a little bit, maybe cash in on the equity a little bit, take out a HELOC or downgrade the place or whatever. But when people have all this extra value on their balance sheet, OK, they become a lot more, quote, secure. They become a lot more less worried about having to work and save. Right? Okay, so the government's basically like, yeah, we saw the numbers this year and it's not good. You motherfuckers need to get back to work. That's what it's about. So if and in that situation, the only thing that will save you is cash. Because they will pay you for your cash, right? Because they're trying to take cash off the table. They'll pay you for your cash, right? And because cash is the ultimate source of value on, you know, book value, right? You know,
Well, it,
they can't deflate that asset.
Isn't that like it's an indicator that the government doesn't want you to buy real estate? Because they want your cash to be, you know.
Yeah, they're trying to take money out of the real estate game.
Mm-hmm.
Simple as that.
Okay, so
because they don't see that real estate is actually like a strategic pursuit in terms of economic planning anymore. It's becoming a problem, right? People are way too focused on real estate.
Yeah, because it keep going up. That's why people are crazy.
Yeah, people
have
just become real estate crazy, and they're not doing other forms of work. And then now they're like, oh shit, we don't have a real economy anymore. We can't find workers to make microchips. We can't find workers to make electric cars. We can't find workers to make solar panels. We can't find workers to work the farms and do, you know, like be cops or do whatever the fuck. There's nobody around to do anything. Everyone's just busy fucking around in the real estate game.
Mm.
You know? And it's not just people buying and flipping houses, but all of the jobs appurtenant to that. How many people became contractors? How many people became real estate agents, mortgage brokers, you know, all this stuff. So many. And in the finance sector, how many people are working on real estate, mortgage underwriting, all this stuff? Huge amounts. There's a huge fucking giant economy built around real estate speculation. You can't have everyone selling fucking real estate for a living.
Because they're not generating.
You're not generating any fucking value.
It's simply bubble.
Yeah, you're just bleeding money that was created in the banking system because the rates were artificially depressed. There's a huge amount of credit creation, and people are just their job is to become parasitic leechers off of the money that comes out of that system in the form of fees, mortgage fees, broker's fees, all that shit, lawyer's fees, all that shit. You know, and you add it up and it's like at the economic planning level, they're like, what the fuck is this? What are we going to do with a nation full of real estate speculators and realtors and mortgage brokers? They're useless. I can't make enough weapons to send to Ukraine. What, you guys going to who's going to build the fucking artillery? You guys are all busy with your real estate broker licenses and shit. You know, you're useless. So, you know, I think that time is up for that. I really think at a high level, people in America, at the highest level planners, are panicked and they're like, we got to turn this around. We got to stop this.
Mm-hmm.
Whether it's going to work, I don't know, but they're hitting the brakes. So, and I that's my belief as mm-hmm. to what's going on. And that's how I'm going to plan it.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the sooner people get out of this real estate obsessed mindset, the better, because I don't think it's coming back. I could be wrong. It could be so ingrained that, you know, they in fact, even at the very top, they want to get back to the real estate conveyor belt economy as quickly as possible. But I would not bet on it. So anyway, that's my spiel, baby. New world. I think it's a new sort of age.
You always said, like, after COVID, the world will no longer be the same.
I think so. Yeah. I mean, I think that really powerful people are not as stupid as we think they are. They're quite smart. They see what's going on, and they know that we need to change. And it's going to be painful. They're going – and
well, it's not going to be painful for them.
No, it's not going to be painful for them. Us. Yeah. It's going to be painful for people who don't realize what the changes are going to be. And a lot of people are just so stubborn and closed-minded about this, and they're going to get crushed. And the planners don't care. They will happily crush people. They don't care. They're very cruel people.
Well, I mean,
so
yes.
So there'll be loads of innocent people who got caught up in this game through no fault of their own. They mm-hmm. were being every single indicator was encouraging them to play this game,
mm-hmm.
to load up on debt, mm-hmm. to overpay for housing.
Mm-hmm.
And no one told them no. From the real estate agent to their friends to the mortgage broker to the seller's agent, nobody in the process said no to them. And so they did it. Everyone encouraged them to do it. It's not their fault, but they just didn't think it through. And then they're going to get crushed and they're going to be surprised that their own government is not going to be there to save them. But look at 2008. They didn't give a shit. People got thrown out on the streets. Did the government care? No.
When did the government ever care?
They don't care. No one's there to save you. This is a free market economy. If you made the, quote, wrong decision, despite the fact that the government encouraged you to make it, but if you went for it anyway, and you didn't think for yourself what was going to happen, you can't later say, oh, the government fucked me, and then expect that they're going to make you whole. They don't care. They don't care about you. Yeah. So if you – the government will encourage you up until the very last day it makes sense. They will keep encouraging you to buy a house, buy a house. And then they're going to change policies. And then they're going to go, oh, yeah, everyone who bought a house over the last 5 years is going to be underwater. Hmm. Right? And they're and we're going to be like, how can you do this? And they're going to be like, I don't know. You made the choice. I mean, did they make the choice? No, they were heavily encouraged by the government to do it. So I feel bad for them.
Mm-hmm.
But that's what I'm saying. In this world, you have to be very cautious with your decision making. And you can't just be like, it seems like the right choice. I don't trust. I've always felt, and I used to work in the mortgage industry. You know, at the securities level, at the sort of bond market level here in like the Wall Street level. And I saw the kinds of people who are in that game.
Mm-hmm.
Trust me, they don't give a shit about you.
Why would they give a shit about you? That's capitalism.
Yeah, people are literally just entries in an Excel table. That's about as human as you get in the real estate process. You're just literally just entries in an Excel spreadsheet.
Yeah, just numbers.
Just numbers that are being pumped through an Excel model. Okay? Nobody cares about you. And the assumption under our ideology is it's a free market. You are free market participants making free market choices. All consequences of your choices are borne by you and you alone.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the government may come up with some sort of, you know, these government programs to help people.
Uh-huh,
but,
uh-huh.
You know, they're never enough. And they're never going to really solve the loss. You got fucked. You know, so just know that in America, you should never feel like there's a safety net. You have to be very fucking careful. And the more euphoric and risk-free they try to make risky behavior seem, the more your alerts should go up to be like, wait, something's wrong here. You know?
Okay.
Like, it shouldn't be that easy to just be like...
Meaning the government would not give you an easy pass.
No, I really don't think they will. I mean, in fact, all the passes that they give you, ultimately, when you look at it, shows you that it's actually wasn't like, for example, those first time home buyer credits.
Mm-hmm.
Those are to encourage people to bring new money into the market. They need, quote, new suckers to come into the market to push everyone up. That's why they have those kind of things. It's not to help you, right? It's to keep the gravy train rolling. And it's helping the people at the top. And those are why those subsidies are around. Nothing is ever altruistic. Nothing is ever there to just help you. Maybe that's not totally true, but
well, for the most part. Depend on the total housing price.
Yeah.
I know, like, there's a subsidy program in here right now in New York City is like 100,000
for new buyers.
But it's
to encourage new buyers.
Yeah, but if you bought a really cheap play, that mm-hmm. actually can pay half of it.
Yeah.
Right. So yeah. It really depends.
Yeah. Look, I mean, there's always going to be good opportunities if you're smart and savvy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm not saying that you can't do anything but you have to be smart. You have to make the calculations of risk and. You have to look through it and think through it,
mm-hmm.
you know, and I think a lot of people are not thinking through because they think that the obvious choice is going to be the right one, which is buy as much house as you could possibly afford.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and we're seeing that at least the most recent round of buyers are all fucked. the ones who bought into this latest COVID bubble, they're all fucking toast.
I feel like even for the past 3 years.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, we're going, they're going to be underwater. Simple as that.
You mean like whoever got the mortgage?
Yeah, they're gonna have a bigger mortgage than the house is worth. So. Anyway. Okay. All right. We'll call it for the episode?
Yeah.
All right. That was our another depressing, dark episode.
Well, not so depressing. It's just like suggestion.
Yeah.
You don't have to, you know, maybe we're wrong.
I don't think we're wrong, but I think Amart's just describing what's already happening.
Okay.
But look, I mean, not everyone is, how do I put this? Some people have owned their houses for a long time. They're fine. Some people don't own a house, and I think they're going to be fine.
Okay.
I think there's people who bought houses fairly recently, but they're affordable. They could easily afford it. They're fine. I think it's really the people who really stretched to buy a house in the last couple years that might have problems.
Yeah, you're like, I don't recommend it.
Yeah, that I think it's the ones who bought at the last push, the last frenzied push, that are gonna get really hurt. You know.
So basically, you just encourage it.
But on top of the fact that their house is gonna be underwater, there has to be another incident, like they have to lose their job or something, you know, because otherwise they could, you just keep paying the mortgage, it's fine. It won't feel good that you're paying a mortgage that's worth more than your house, right? But maybe, well, and actually, they may be able to get bank workouts at some point.
Oh, okay.
Right, so down the road, they may be able to renegotiate that mortgage.
Okay. Meaning the bank still wants some money from you, they don't want you to completely...
Yeah, because a lot of people might just walk away. Just be like, why would I pay for, you know, pay off a mortgage that's worth...
Well, it depends on how much you pay for your down payment, then.
That's true. I mean, it all comes. But I think there may be situations where, like, banks down the road may help you. That's what happened in 08. You know, banks were helping people renegotiate their mortgages.
Okay.
To prevent an all-out loss.
Okay. Well, we'll see what's going to happen.
Yeah. All right. Well, that's our episode for this week. Bye.
Bye.